From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast Podcast. As always, I am Justin Spears, joined alongside here by my man, Dominic Pachaco.
What's going on?
You are tuning in to the Wildcast Podcast on the Wildcaster app, Apple Podcasts, or Tucson.com. Dom, it's been a minute since we recorded a podcast last. What has it been? Well over a week?
Oh, it was right when you were leaving for Summer League, so.
Yeah, and a lot has happened between then.
Outside of Summer League, too.
Yeah, let's say between my poor backpack getting stolen.
Your backpack incident. The backpack incident of 2018.
Where were you? Where were you when my backpack was stolen out of the backseat of my car?
In the newsroom. I got the first call from you that night on my drive home asking if your backpack was here.
Oh, man. But we're still alive and well. We still have our health. That's what's most important.
And a brand new laptop.
And a brand new spanking laptop. Oh, man. Times are good. But anyways, Dom, so we recorded before NBA Summer League, but during NBA Summer League, which we'll be getting to in just a minute, some fun times out there in Las Vegas. But I think we should lead with Arizona basketball, the actual Wildcats in Tucson. Stone Gettings from Cornell. He's a transfer, a graduate transfer. He will be going to the Arizona Wildcats, but he won't be joining them right away. He'll be a graduate transfer, which is weird. It's a graduate transfer, but he's going to graduate from Cornell in December before joining the team.
I went to Cornell. Ever heard of it?
You ever heard of it, Dom?
Nard dog has. yeah, so Stone Gettings, it's a rare situation because he's a grad transfer, but he hasn't graduated yet. So what's going to end up happening in all likelihood is that he will graduate in December and he will be eligible to join the Wildcats in January on their last scholarship, so their 13th scholarship for 2018-19. But he won't be here till January, which is when he will be able to start practicing with the team, take part in all of the off-court stuff that goes on. Similar to what you saw Chase Jeter do, very similarly Chase Jeter, or no, not Chase Jeter, who am I thinking of? Last grad transfer.
Luther.
So that's the weird part is he's a grad transfer, but he's not done yet. So he's got to kind of sit out for, because most grad transfers, they come in and they can play right away. Stone Gettings has to sit out for a year because he's not graduated yet. He's a grad transfer, but not until January.
Yes. Which is weird.
Right, which is unique for a grad transfer, so I shouldn't try comparing him to anybody because it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, because he's an interesting case, like you said. He's going to graduate in December, then be a part of Arizona's practices.
He'll be on their practice squad, quote-unquote, in January. So, again, he'll be part of their roster this year, but he'll actually be on the roster eligible to play games in 2019-20. Yes. So you won't see him on the court in action in a Wildcat jersey until this time next year, but he will be in Tucson in January if all pans out. A big man, look, Bruce Pascoe said it in his article earlier this week on Stone Gettings. We don't really know what Arizona's front court will look like next year. You could have Chase Jeter, Ira Lee, and Emmanuel Acott all return, and Stone Gettings could just fall into what would be a pretty deep interior line for Arizona. But again, that's presuming all those guys come back. One could leave and Stone Gettings jumps right in. We don't know how it's going to work out. We don't know what kind of presence he'll bring, but it's going to be a good one. I mean, at the very least, it'll give them depth, which they've been aching for. And they have it kind of going into this year, and they have some security moving forward too. Another reason this is big for Miller is because it gets them a name for 2019-20. They already have a lot of prospects. They have a lot of their eyes on a lot of people, including Nico Mannion, who's considering reclassifying. So they have their eyes on big-time recruits for 2019-20, and now they have a grad transfer already on the roster for next year, which is big for Sean Miller and all the uncertainty surrounding Arizona basketball for where it's at. Look, they want to pile up on names as soon as possible. As we saw this year, it can and will get late for them, so it's good to get players now while you can.
Yeah, and if you're an Arizona fan, you have to have your fingers crossed that Chase Jeter sticks around because unless Miller and staff, unless they get a big man, you're looking at very, very small ball, because Chase Jeter has been projected to be a possible NBA draft pick, in which he has the talent to.
If anyone gets drafted on Arizona's team this year, it's going to be Chase Jeter.
It's going to be him.
Right.
But if he were to somehow return, and you look at the roster for 19-20, Ryan Luther, who is the Pitt grad transfer for this year, he'll be gone.
Mm-hmm.
So Stone Gettings just falls right into Luther's role, mm-hmm. which will – he probably won't be a starter. I would imagine Ira Lee, if he were to return, a third-year guy with mm-hmm. him, I think he would be the starter. But you have a 6'8" power forward coming off the bench, shot 37% from three-point range at Cornell, was a second-team All-Ivy League prospect. Again, it's Ivy League, so
right.
I don't really know how good this guy is, but it's a body.
Well, and the other thing is that we've seen players kind of come in and have to sit out a year, T.J. McConnell, for instance, and sit under Sean Miller and work through all these off-season practices, and yep. then, I mean, he's going to be in Sean Miller's system for, I mean, think about it. He won't be eligible to play until right now, a year from right now, but he'll be here in January. That's, you know, 7, 8, 9 months leading up to the start of the season that he gets time with the Wildcats. He's not going to be on the court getting game time experience, but he's going to be working out with Sean Miller. He's going to be working out with Chase Jeter and Ira Lee and all these bigs, Ryan Luther,
yep.
Similar to how Dusan Ristich gained experience working out with DeAndre Ayton. I mean, you got to yep. go guard him in practice. Stone Gettings is going to be on the court with these guys, so he'll be getting experience in Sean Miller's system. He's not going to be a fresh, brand-new face in October of 2019, because he would have already been in Tucson for half the year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's big for Sean Miller. It's a big land, and we'll see what it, like you said, tough to gauge where this kind of Ivy League star stands in a conference like the Pac-12, but we'll find out, and that's the exciting part for Sean Miller. One other thing I want to touch on before we dive into Summer League stuff is Ryan Luther. I know we talked about him on the last podcast we did, Justin.
Yeah.
Bruce Pasco was lucky enough to sit down with him in practice earlier. God, I want to say it was later last week now. You can get that article online, Tucson.com. But one thing that stuck out to me that I don't think got enough attention was Sean Miller's relationship with Ryan Luther. He's a Pittsburgh guy. We all know Sean Miller's roots and ties to Pittsburgh. Obviously, you can go back and look at T.J. McConnell and his roots and ties to Miller, and how Miller got him to come out here. How that was kind of always in the fold, in the woodwork, so to speak. But you look at a guy like Ryan Luther. Sean Miller said this about his family. He compared his relationship to Ryan Luther's family to that of his relationship with T.J. McConnell and his family, which I think is huge. I think that says.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that speaks volumes of what kind of kid Ryan Luther is. I mean, he's obviously coming off of 2 foot injuries in his career at Pitt, and which never really took off because of those injuries. But look, if he's healthy as he says he is now, he's been cleared to play, and look, he's not going 100% right now because he's easing into it. But he said he could give it 100% right now. He could push it as hard as he wants and probably be okay, but obviously yeah. easing into it. Look, if he's healthy, this is my point.
That's Arizona's starting power forward right there.
Look, it's Arizona's starting power forward, and you already have your head coach comparing his relationship to him with one of, I mean, the all-time Arizona favorites in T.J. McConnell. So
yeah.
this kind of bond and relationship that Ryan Luther brings to with Sean Miller, I think, is huge. And again, just speaking about those relationships that these players build with the coach, he's not going to be here very long before the season starts. Relative to some of the rest of this team, like Chase Jeter, Ira Lee, Emmanuel Acott, who've been in the system. But look, Ryan Luther, if he is as close with Sean Miller as it sounds like he is, I think that's going to turn out well for him. I mean, you look at, yeah. again, if he's healthy. But
yeah.
I just thought it was interesting. I mean, comparing anyone to T.J. McConnell's family, I think yeah. that kind of sticks out on the page for you.
Well, it's interesting because Luther brings experience.
Mm-hmm.
Not a whole lot of NCAA tournament experience, but you look across the roster other than Chase Jeter, who has had NCAA tournament experience, because all the guys that are supposed to be quote-unquote the veterans all got bounced last year in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't know a deep tournament run. Sean Miller does. And when Sean Miller has deep tournament runs, he relies on experience. Guys like T.J. McConnell, who took Arizona to back-to-back Elite Eight appearances.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Luther is probably going to be that guy. And then plus you mix in hopefully he can be an alpha dog point guard in Brandon Williams. I like his mentality. I like his attitude. You mix those two together, it could be all right for Arizona for next year. But those foot injuries, it leaves a big question mark for me.
Absolutely. I mean, it'll be a big topic of discussion going into the season. I mean, even if he says he told Bruce now, he was cleared. He feels good now. So that's encouraging. Yeah. But every basketball player coming off an injury is going to feel pretty damn good a month before the season, you know, a month before practices kick off. So yeah. It's one thing to say it now, but once he kicks into, you know, game time reps every day, then it's going to be a different story, and we'll see how his foot holds up. But again, if he's healthy, that's huge. One more thing about Stone Getting, sorry going back and forth here, but another connection to Arizona, it was Parker Jackson Cartwright who...
Ah, that's right.
Hopefully, and Parker said hopefully he played a hand in it. They played high school ball together in Los Angeles, same team as Thomas Welsh, I believe. Yep. UCLA Senator Thomas Welsh. So, Parker Jackson Cartwright talked to Bruce and said, I would like to think that I played a hand in Stone Getting's coming to Arizona. So... Look, Arizona has a lot of things in the woodwork moving forward into this season and next. We'll see how it all plays out. For now, Justin, you have been in Las Vegas, got back last week, spent the first week before tournament play up in Las Vegas watching 7 Wildcats kind of
count them. 7.
You compare my favorite comparison I heard from you all week. You called it the Comic-Con for NBA fans, because it's, that's what it is. I mean,
to a T.
Yeah, I mean, every single fan. I mean, tell us how it is. I mean, it's every basketball fan who's not doing anything, every player, coach, celebrity who's around, available. I mean, it's the offseason for them, so they all flee to Vegas, right?
Yeah, it was awesome. It was so cool. I didn't expect there to be so many NBA figures, because it's summer league, and a lot of the players will not be on the team after this. But, you know, like, for instance, the first game, Raleigh Alkins on day one, his debut, and we'll talk about Raleigh a little bit later, but it was his debut at noon, and the first person I see when I walk into the arena or get close to the court is DeMar DeRozan, who, by the way, is not a Toronto Raptor anymore because he was traded to the San Antonio Spurs.
You saw the Toronto Raptor, DeMar DeRozan.
I was like, oh, this is really cool. And sure enough, once I got into more games and watching more games, you started seeing Donovan Mitchell, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Magic Johnson was there watching the Lakers, Rudy Gobert was there. Oh, pretty much the entire Jazz roster was there watching their teams play. All these players, they all come over to watch the young guys, watch the draft picks for the second-year players grow and support their team sitting courtside. And that's same with the coaches, same with the front office. Like, everybody is there. Mm-hmm. The Kings.
Yeah.
That was just walking by, and I see Vlade Divac and Peja Stojakovic just chilling. And not only does it bring out NBA figures, but the fans, it's just all NBA nerds. Just like it is
filled to the brim too. I mean, these games were sellouts the first week or so.
Yeah, it was mostly for the Lakers. Mm-hmm. It was really cool for me as a Lakers fan, right, seeing all these Lakers jerseys, but they were all nerds. That's the best part. It was just guys,
NBA
guys that just love basketball. And that's why I said it was the Basketball Comic-Con. And it was definitely quite the experience, and I recommend anybody who loves the NBA, NBA Summer League is for you. So, but
one of our storylines.
Anyways, just we're going to kind of hash away some takeaways that we digested during NBA Summer League. And we all know that y'all want to hear about the Phoenix Suns' number one overall draft pick, DeAndre Ayton. I think that looking over the 3 games, he didn't play against Luka Doncic. That was his debut against the Mavericks. Luka Doncic was still working out his contract with the Mavericks and Real Madrid. But Ayton kind of had a mix debut. I think he had, what was it, like 8.6 rebounds?
In his debut, 10 points, 8 boards, 3 turnovers, and a block in 22 minutes.
So it was pretty quiet. And I said it was quiet, and he almost had a double-double. But then the next day...
So how many times have we said DeAndre Ayton had a quiet night when it was really a double-double? I mean, almost every game in Arizona, almost I feel like it was a quiet night, but it was a double-double. And he averaged a double-double in Vegas, averaged 14 and 10. So one of seven players to average a double-double in Las Vegas, and he did it quietly.
But what, Dom, I've got to ask you, what was the best performance for Ayton? Because I think it's already clear. Ayton's best game... was the second game against the Kings.
Yep, 21 points, 12 boards. His first double-double, 8 of 11 from the field. He was just effective. I mean, this is DeAndre Ayton doing DeAndre Ayton. I mean, he looked like he was at Arizona again doing it at the NBA level. Granted, it's G League. And look, I want to make that very clear. I've seen way too many overreactions on the side of, oh, franchise player, number one, best player ever wear a Suns jersey. I've seen, you know, he's terrible. He's been terrible. What was that one I showed you on Facebook that was about so much for a once-in-a-generation player after he had 10 points, 9 rebounds, and 6 turnovers in his final summer league game against the Sixers. Look, I don't care if we average. I don't care if we average a bad game that was 10 points and 9 rebounds. I don't care if he averaged 20 and 20 or if he averaged 5 points and 5 rebounds. Summer league doesn't give you many conclusions. And DeAndre Ayton looked good for the most part, I thought.
Yeah.
Of course, he's going to have his struggles and he has to adjust to the NBA as any player does. I think why you see. Why it's easier for people to ridicule someone like DeAndre Ayton and someone of his caliber is because he has such great expectations. Yeah. So when he comes out and kind of takes a couple games to get used to it and to get into the flow, people kind of freak out and go, yeah. What is this? He was supposed to be a once-in-a-generation guy. He'll get there. He'll be that player. It's not going to happen right away. It might take a whole season. I don't think it will. I think he'll settle in, you know, within the first month. But it's going to take him some games to get, you know, to get settled in. And I think you showed that that showed in Vegas. You know, he had some really good performances like that against the Kings. He had some not so great performances where he was kind of sloppy against the Sixers. Still effective. 10 points, 9 boards, 3 steals, and a block in 30 minutes. I mean, you'll take that. Maybe not from a number one NBA draft pick in the middle of a season. But in NBA Summer League, when you're trying to mold these guys and get them ready for live action, you're going to take it.
Yeah.
And DeAndre Ayton, like I said, needs to develop just like anyone else. He just has greater expectations.
One thing that I've always been impressed with DeAndre Ayton is whenever, like during the draft process, he always said, I'm not saying I'm the best player in the draft. I'm telling you, mm-hmm. I'm the best competitor.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in NBA Summer League, when you're the number one overall draft pick, you're already guaranteed a spot on the team. You already signed your contract. You're not playing for really anything other than you're just playing for the NBA team that drafted you. And he still, against Marvin Bagley, showed that competitive edge. But my favorite part about the whole weekend with Ayton was the final regular season game against the Magic. Because it was against Mo Bamba, who a few people actually thought the Suns could have possibly taken Bamba over mm-hmm. Ayton at number one overall. The Suns worked out Bamba, so they were thinking about it. Ayton never beat Bamba in high school. Bamba was 4-0,
that's right. Yeah.
4-0 against DeAndre Ayton. And Ayton went out, and that was the main goal, was to beat Mo Bamba just so he could say, I beat you.
Which, I mean, speaks to the,
awesome.
To the competitive edge as you were just talking
that's
about.
Awesome.
I mean, this guy's – and I think that's important, too, the competitive edge aspect of it. Because, look, this is a Suns team that hasn't won 40 games since 2013, hasn't won 50 games or made the playoffs last since 2010.
The last time – oh, wow.
Right.
Wow.
Last time won 50 games was when it made the playoffs 2010. They've won 40 games just twice since then. So, look –
to put it in perspective, the Lakers were good at that time.
right, winning championships. So, look, DeAndre Ayton is coming into a Suns team that is very much rebuilding, very much expects to be competitive for years to come. Will they be in the playoffs this year? If I had to make a bet, I would say no. So DeAndre Ayton's coming into a team that would do very well to win 40 games this year. I mean, that would be a huge step in the right direction, and I think they do. I think they get through that threshold, which is huge because they won 21 games last year. So if you double that, get 42 wins this year, you're not going to be in the playoffs in the West Coast Conference. But, hey, you don't need to be in the playoffs. You're rebuilding. I mean, look what the Sixers have done. They didn't turn that around in a year. It's going to be a process. And DeAndre Ayton might be a once-in-a-generation player. That doesn't mean he turns you into the Golden State Warriors in a year, okay? It's going to take time. If he has an iffy year this year, we can start talking about it and start talking about his potential, but and adjusting expectations, I guess. But I don't expect that. I expect DeAndre Ayton to be the player we all think he's going to be. It might just take a little bit of time because the Suns aren't going to be blowing teams away like fans want them to.
Yeah.
But trust me, DeAndre Ayton will be doing his part. And like you said, he'll be competing his butt off more than anyone else on the court on any given night, which is huge.
Was it a big coincidence that his best games in Summer League were when he wasn't wearing his Pumas?
Might be.
Because his debut, he wore Pumas, had a, remember I said, quiet game.
Right.
But his second and third game,
those Kobes,
he wore the new Kobes.
It was the Mamba mentality. You have a clip from him, Justin, from Summer League. Yeah,
I asked Ayton why he wore the Kobes instead of the Pumas, a brand in which he signed a multi-year contract with. Let's go ahead and hear what Ayton had to say about why he decided to go with Nike instead of Puma.
What was the decision in wearing the Kobes today?
Oh, the Kobes, yeah. You know, Puma, me and Puma, you know, love Puma shoes, but, you know, we're size 18, so we're working on putting a lot of technology in the shoe, and, you know,
you got stumped.
They want me to perform the best way I can, so they want me to hold out and just really stay focused on the game. And while, you know, they're making adjustments now in the shoes, so, you know, I wear size, it's a big shoe. I'm a big man, so that's about it.
So
what that let me translate. allow me to get my interpretation. Puma ain't ready for all these big guys. Look, they're brand new in the basketball world, relatively, and they're not ready to compete with Nike and Adidas and all these brands that have been pumping out shoes for professional athletes that have multi-million-dollar, multi-year contracts. Puma's going to get there, but they're not there yet. And I think you saw a little bit of their inexperience in Vegas when DeAndre Ayton, their number one draft pick, comes out in Nike shoes.
Mm. And I like what Ayton said is Puma, they want me to play well. So they want Ayton to get his feet wet in the NBA, get used to the game, be a dominant player, and then start wearing the shoe. The materials, though, they have to, they, like you said, they're not ready for the big boys.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to wear the Walt Clyde Frazier Pumas mm-hmm. when you're at a Puma pop-up shop in New York, just walking around, just hanging out. But when it comes to actual game action and playing basketball,
right? I mean, you need essentially 82 brand new pairs of shoes for throughout the course of a season mm-hmm. for these 7'1" freaks who are competing at the highest stage of basketball. I mean, it's just, I mean, it's going to take time. Puma's going to get there. Ayton's going to get there in Puma gear. But it was interesting. I mean, he came out in the second game with Kobe's on, which obviously kind of turned some heads.
Mm-hmm. Dom, throughout NBA Summer League, though, out of all the former Wildcats, mm-hmm. which one were you impressed with the most?
I'm interested to hear what you say, since you were there, watched every single game. The one guy that stood out to me, and you could probably pick the same guy, but the one guy that stood out to me was Alonzo Trier. Not for the reasons you'd think. Look, he averaged 17 points, shot 44% from the field, 18% from three, so he struggled a little bit off the ball, but 5 rebounds, 3 assists, averaged 30 minutes a game. So he was on the court putting in minutes for the Knicks. What I liked about Trier, though, was that they had him playing point guard a lot.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that's where, look, I've harped on Alonzo Trier for the better part of the last year about how he's better driving through the lane, getting to the rim, as opposed to shooting basketball from the outside. Look, you can throw all these stats at me that you want from Alonzo Trier in Pac-12 play. I know he's one of the best shooters in the conference over the last 2 years. He shot 18% in Summer League. And again, I'm not trying to draw anything from these Summer League numbers. I'm just trying to put into perspective, Alonzo Trier, and I've said this a million times, Trier is at his best when he's getting to the rim. So what the Knicks did is said, okay, we're going to put you in a point guard role, and we're going to kind of switch you off from how you play on defenders, you know, whether it's on ball or off ball. We're going to put you in a point guard position and see how you respond. He responded by averaging 17 points a game by often playing the point guard position. Mm. I think that's huge. I think if Alonzo Trier comes in, and you and I talked about in the last podcast, how he needs to find one thing to be really good at. And I don't think it's shooting, because if shooting is your one thing in the NBA, you need to be doing it as good as Steph Curry. You need to be doing it as good as Klay Thompson. I mean, that's the standard for shooters in the NBA. You need to be as good of these guys, as good as these guys to beat them. And I got news for you, Alonzo Trier, as good of a shooter as you think he is, he's not at that level. And excuse me, he's just not consistent enough. He can show flashes and have nights where he comes out and is hot and hits 50% of his shots from the field. But that's not what he's going to make a living on a career on in the NBA. So
yeah.
Look, if he can come out and distribute the ball like he did in Las Vegas as effectively as he did in Vegas and find other ways to contribute, I think that's huge. I think that gives him an opportunity to shine in the NBA outside of just being a scorer, especially if he can still average 17 points a game. That's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just another opportunity for Alonzo Trier to kind of make a niche in the NBA outside of just shooting the ball, which he did. He did, again, it was spot shooting in Vegas. A couple games he went off, a couple games. Like he was 0 for 4 in one game from outside. He didn't shoot the ball great, but no. he was contributing in other ways enough to say, okay, this guy should probably be on the court.
Yeah. He also shot like, felt like 8 free throws a game though.
Right. No, and he shot, I mean, second game against the Jazz, 7-7 free throws. So that's where Trier makes his money at shooting the ball, is driving through the lane and getting the basket. Mm-hmm. Obviously in the NBA, we don't know how that's going to shape up because he's not as big as some of these guys who'll be matching up against. But again, it's just finding as many things to do consistently as you can in the NBA and to do them well. Alonzo Trier needs something more than shooting, which I think he's found at the point guard position. Whether or not he stays there, I don't know. But he showed well in Las Vegas, and I was impressed.
Yeah. I was mostly impressed with Kobe Simmons for the Grizzlies.
Mm-hmm.
Played
up to the semifinals. Yes, he was the last cat standing.
Very last one. I wasn't impressed with him at first in Las Vegas because the Grizzlies head coach, excuse us, man, we're coughing all over the place, man.
Out of nowhere.
The Grizzlies head coach, I don't know why I'm blanking on his name right now, but the summer league coach, he told me that he was alternating Kobe between both shooting guard and point guard, similar to what the Knicks had with Alonzo Trier. They were just constantly alternating him. And Simmons actually played his best when he was a shooting guard. When he got recruited at Arizona, he was a point guard, in which I actually thought he was going to be the starting point guard mm-hmm. ahead of Kadeem Allen.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought you could put Trier at the three, have Kadeem Allen play two, and have Kobe at the one.
Right.
But when Kobe was the point or the shooting guard alongside Javon Carter, mm-hmm. West Virginia guy,
mm-hmm.
those two together, they worked so well together. And Kobe, the last game he had was 25 points that he had, and he got to the free throw line, but he also was active on the defensive end.
Yeah, in that semifinal loss, yeah. 23 points.
23 points, and he had three steals in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember so many times Simmons would have breakdowns at Arizona, and every time he had a defensive breakdown, Sean Miller would yank him out of the game right away.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're starting to see the NBA game kind of take Kobe Simmons and kind of mold to a player that I always thought he was going to be at Arizona. A scorer, a guy that's quick, a guy that's really crafty, somebody that can get their hands in the lanes. I actually thought he was going to be more De'Aaron Fox at Arizona. You're starting to see him take on a De'Aaron Fox role in the NBA. I was very impressed with Kobe Simmons throughout the entire summer league, although maybe his better games were in Salt Lake City before Las Vegas. I was impressed with Kobe Simmons, but Trier
mm-hmm.
exceeded my expectations.
Right.
I didn't think Trier would ball out to the but I didn't think he would go to the limit that he had
mm-hmm.
where he was scoring and also facilitating. And I was also really surprised that he started. Out of all the Wildcats that I thought would get starting minutes, I thought Raleigh Alkins would play more for the Raptors. I thought Simmons would play more for the Grizzlies. But
played 30 minutes in every game.
Every single game. And there were actually a couple of games where he led the team in minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Where Kevin Knox, mm-hmm. who was the number 9 overall pick, played one less minute. I know it's petty that Trier played one more minute than Kevin Knox, but he's starting and he's playing significant minutes, leading the Knicks in minutes. Hey, that's pretty impressive.
It bodes well. And Trier, you look at guys like Raleigh Alkins, who had to come out and prove something to the Raptors, which now takes on kind of a different landscape with DeRozan gone. But look, Raleigh Alkins had to prove something to the Raptors, and I don't know if he did. He had that one big game, 25 points against the Hornets in the second round of tournament play. So, look, each one of these Wildcats had big games. I mean, you look at Alonzo Trier, had a few big games, 21 points against the Lakers in their last summer league game before tournament play. Raleigh Alkins just said the 25 points. DeAndre Ayton averaged a double-double. And Kobe Simmons had a couple big games, including in the semifinals. So these Wildcats had to come into Vegas and prove something. A lot of them on two-way deals.
Yeah.
And I think for the most part, a lot of them did. Where it'll take them, I'm not sure. It'll be interesting to see what comes of Raleigh Alkins in Toronto finally signing an agent. So we'll see. We'll see where he ends up, but I think Alonzo Trier, out of everyone, really earned a spot on the Knicks. He's a two-way player, so I know we want to talk about that a little bit, because that was a topic of discussion in Las Vegas a lot. You've probably heard Alonzo Trier allude to the fact in some way, shape, or form, kind of unclear, unspecific, For lack of a better way to describe it, that he skipped over some teams who wanted to draft him so that he could sign with the Knicks as an undrafted free agent. And a lot of people go, okay, well, wait a minute. What does that mean? He's skipping. Is he telling teams no, that he doesn't want to be drafted?
Yeah.
And I know you talked to him, Justin. What did you gain from that? And I know you talked to you said you talked to Raleigh and Kadeem about it, or one of them in their situation. Yeah, Kobe in their situation is also on two-way contracts. So what did you get from Trier in Las Vegas?
Yeah, well, Trier said between picks 41 through 60, teams actually called him and wanted to draft him. And Trier said, nah, no. I know that players have leverage in the draft because they can tell teams that I don't want you to pick me. Like Mo Bamba, he didn't want to, excuse me, as I get a push notification. For the worldwide leader of sports.
This one not about Nick. An hour ago was about Nick Foles winning an ESPY. Shout out.
Oh, shout out. Super Bowl MVP right there. He had the opportunity to get, anyway, or back to what I was saying is players have leverage in the NBA draft. Like I said, Mo Bamba told the Memphis Grizzlies, I don't want you to draft me. I didn't work out for you, so if I fall to you, don't bother drafting me.
Mm-hmm.
You could do that. But if a team actually drafts you, I always thought, hey, if we're picking you, we're picking you, whether you like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so apparently Trier had an opportunity to get picked number 41 through 60. And through the couple phone calls, he declined getting drafted because he wanted to find an ideal fit. He worked out for the Knicks a couple times, worked out for them twice, thought that they were a better fit out of any of the teams that wanted to draft him. He didn't think that Mitchell Robinson would fall that far in the draft. And they apparently, according to Trier, the Knicks told Trier that they wanted to go big before they got him, which was understandable. So they drafted Mitchell Robinson. They didn't have any more picks after that. The Knicks wanted Trier, and Trier wanted to go to the Knicks. So Trier said to all those teams that wanted to draft him, nah, I'm waiting so I can go and find the ideal fit, which is with the New York Knicks, which doesn't make sense because at first you're costing yourself a lot of money.
Look, Trier's that's what blows my mind, is, and Trier's doubled down on it. So if that's what actually happened, then look, I'm glad he's happy in New York with the Knicks. But you look at Trier's facing, look, he can make as little as $75,000 on a two-way deal with the Knicks this year. He's going to make more than that. He'll spend a lot of time in New York. I feel, after how he played in Las Vegas, I think he'll spend a good amount of the season with New York. But he can make as little as $75,000 on this two-way deal. And you look at, I mean, he could be on a $1 million contract for 4 years with a team who drafted him. So that's, I don't know, it doesn't, I mean, a team for 4 years on a contract where you can build a relationship and a bond and make that fit in 4 years. I mean, you have something stable as opposed to a two-way contract that might only be a year, might be 2 years. They might cut you. You might only make $75,000 this year. we say only, like, that. That's
only
insignificant money.
I'd love to make $75,000.
$75,000 in the NBA relative to what he could have been making if he was a second-round draft pick. Look, I'm going to read you some of the names of two-way guys from a season ago. Let me know if any of these are eye-popping names. The Suns had Alec Peters, Daniel House, C.J. Wilcox was a Blazer, Jack Cooley.
Summer League legend.
Matt Costello, Summer League legend. I mean, just going through here, Devin Robinson, again, stop me if any of these names pop off the page. PJ Dozier, I feel like Dozier, yep. Who am I thinking of? Another Dozier in the league. Isaiah Hicks, Marshall Plumlee, Derek Walton Jr., I guess Derek Jones Jr., I guess are two of the bigger names on this list. Kobe Simmons, look, the list
Kadeem
goes
Allen.
On. Kadeem Allen
was
on there.
Draft
Chris
pick.
Boucher, who's one of the better ones. But look, the success rate of these two-way players is not great. Trier faces an uphill battle now.
Yeah.
Whereas if he was drafted, I think he had a much clearer path. He'd be getting minutes on an NBA team right away.
Yeah.
So it confused me. It throws me off. But look, if he's happy, if that's what actually happened, if he turned down teams in the draft, that is a bold, bold move. And I hope it works out for him.
Yeah.
But, like I said, he's got an uphill climb in New York now.
But Kadeem Allen,
mm-hmm.
he was drafted in the second round, and he ended up with a two-way contract.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes being drafted doesn't really mean that you're getting paid a fat amount of money
mm-hmm.
up front. Because
right.
Kadeem Allen signed a two-way contract. And the only
and
way...
it was waived a year later.
And it was waived, exactly, a year later. So, maybe, like I told you before this podcast, maybe Alonzo Trier is out here playing chess, and we're playing checkers, and we have no idea. But we will know our answer in about 3 to 4 years. When that rookie contract is up. Or no, 2 years.
2 years.
After his two-way contract is up, and the Knicks decide what they want to do. But if he's going to play point guard, it's going to be hard. You got Frank Ntilikina, still have Emmanuel Mudiay on
it's
roster.
It's
going to
be hard, but I love it. I love Trier as a point guard. I don't know why.
I
don't know why. I think it's an interesting prospect. One other player I want to look at really quick before we sign off here is another Knick while we're on the subject of Trier's teammates here.
A Wildcat.
Who I think was the MVP in Vegas, at least showed me the most promise out of any player drafted in this year's draft, was Kevin Knox.
Yeah.
And I know you saw him play live, so you probably can add more to this than I can, but the dude looked amazing.
Yeah.
The number 9 overall draft pick. I'm looking at Knicks draft picks over the years. Looking at all of their top 10 picks dating back to 2005 when they took one Channing Frye with the number 8 overall pick. Looking at their top 10 picks, Channing Frye, Danilo Gallinari, Jordan Hill, Shumpert was 17th in the first round, Kristaps Porzingis was 4th, Ntilikina last year, and Kevin Knox this year. I think outside of Kristaps, and I think you can even make a solid argument to go up with Kristaps, Porzingis, Kristaps, I don't know what to call him.
The unicorn.
Look, I think Kevin Knox is right there with him as far as most talented prospects the Knicks have drafted in recent years. This dude is the real deal. I think the Cavs will end up kicking themselves. Cavs have the number 8 pick, right?
Yep.
To Colin Sexton.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to end up kicking themselves over not picking Kevin Knox, because I think, look, he's not the next LeBron James, but I think he fits into that role. He would have been the small forward.
Watered down.
He would have been, he would have been that guy to move forward. But I get it. They needed a point guard. They took Colin Sexton. But I think Kevin Knox is going to be the real deal,
mm-hmm.
Just out of what we've seen. Again, that's based off of what we've seen in Vegas. So take it with a grain of salt, but he looked awfully impressive.
Every draft has, you know, their top picks are always going to be phenomenal,
mm-hmm.
unless you're the 2013 draft and you get Anthony Bennett.
Shout out to Anthony Bennett, wherever you might be.
But you always think about the players that were drafted in maybe the mid-first round, late first round. Like, for instance, last year, who were some of the players that we talk about from last year's draft that made a huge impact that weren't drafted within the top 5 picks?
Mm-hmm.
Donovan Mitchell, who was drafted 13th, I think, by the Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And Kyle Kuzma, who was another all-rookie guy, who was drafted the very last pick of the first round. So, I don't know, Dom. Maybe it's just me, but I have a gut feeling that a few years down the road, or even maybe after this year, if Kevin Knox wins Rookie of the Year somehow, that we're going to look back and say, this was the Kevin Knox draft.
The Knicks have the pieces. I mean, that's the you and I have talked about this before, and it's like, are the Knicks going to be good in a couple of years? They have the pieces. My thought process is, what could go wrong, and when will it go wrong? I think that answer will get I think that question will get answered before are they legit, or maybe at the same time something goes wrong and no, they aren't legit. But look, they have Mitchell Robinson now. They have Kevin Knox. Nitapolina is a good prospect, and they have all these names who can mesh well together. If they bring up Alonzo Trier, he can fit into the mix and put them all aside Kristaps Porzingis. I mean, are they legit right now? No, they're not going to make the playoffs. They're not going to be good this year, but they have the pieces. I mean, if you look at teams down the road who are, okay, who's going to be good in 3-4 years from now when all these rookie contracts come up and we're seeing what they're really made of, I think the Knicks can be right there. And that's crazy to say. I might regret it in 6 months when the Knicks have won 6 games through the first few months of the season. But no, look, it's the Knicks. A lot can go wrong. A lot will go wrong. But they got the pieces, and Alonzo Trier can fit in nicely to that. If Alonzo Trier is playing aside Kevin Knox, that's what I'm getting at here. If Kevin Knox is Alonzo Trier's teammate and Trier is playing point guard or shooting guard, whatever it may be, he's going to be playing alongside some pretty decent talent.
According to David Fizdale, first-year head coach,
right,
Trier is a quote-unquote assassin, which wasn't really shown in summer league, because if you think about assassin, 44%, you think about sharpshooters.
Yeah, 18% assassin. But
he compared him to Lou Williams, mm-hmm, who is 2-time sixth man of the year, which I could totally see Trier falling into that role.
Trier comes off the bench as a point guard for Nicolino down the road, like... Look, Trier will sign up for
good
that.
Good things are coming.
Heartbeat, yeah. I mean, look, you can have worse careers in the NBA than Lou Williams.
Absolutely. All right, well, that will do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, like us on Facebook, download the Wildcaster app, and as always, subscribe to the Wildcast Podcast, available on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening.